I'm very excited to be here and talk about content strategy and why it's so important for all of us in higher education. The hashtags, obviously HEWeb10, TNT11, content is dynamite, and content strategy. So, quick introduction. I'm Rick. I work at Babson College as the manager of web content for the graduate school business. I was hired earlier this year to implement a lot of the things that I'm going to be talking about today. I'm also a consultant at ePublish Media. I focus on content strategy, user experience design, and online communications. And also, I'm the founder of Content Strategy New England, which is a community of web content professionals in the Boston area that focus on bringing clear communication to online user experiences through the evolving discipline of content strategy. We host a lot of events, speakers, including Christina Halverson, who came a few months ago, who literally wrote the book on content strategy for the web. So you can tell I have a mild interest in this topic. First, a favor. I'd really love questions. I may have to delay some until the end to make sure that I get everything in, but if you have questions, please raise your hand, and if I can, I'll try and get them in. I also have, Tim here has, can you raise your hand, Tim? Tim has volunteered to be my back channel buddy, so if anyone has any questions on there, he can help facilitate that too. Okay, so what are we gonna talk about? We're gonna talk about why quality web content is so important. Higher education. Elements that comprise a content strategy, and how to maintain quality content. So, piece of cake, right? Let's get started. Why quality web content is so important. So why am I talking, focusing on content? Why are we having this discussion? Why am I having to ask the question or suggest that content may not, you know, be high quality or right? Well, I'm a publisher. Just like you. Surprise. Actually, I don't think a lot of you are surprised. I'm sure that everyone here would recognize that content is a critical element of your website. But I'm sure you can also appreciate that we have a hard time keeping up quality content, creating it, sustaining it. But it's important to put yourself in this publishing mindset. Christina Halverson says, the moment you launch a website, an email campaign, a mobile application, or content of any kind, you're a publisher. She says, shouldn't you start acting like one? And the answer is yes. Because content is why people visit our website. Period. They don't come for the design, they don't come for the user experience, they come for the content. View yourself more like a publisher delivering valuable editorial products than as a marketer selling products and services. This is coming from Joe Polizzi. He's kind of the content marketing evangelist. He has a book called Get Content, Get Customers. So again, why is content neglected? Not just in higher education, but elsewhere too. We all use the web, we know. So if you work on the web, as we all do, you should be able to appreciate, right, the challenges, the answers to this question. Right? Content is massive. It's seemingly uncontrollable. It's daunting. We have content, thousands of pages, tens of thousands on our website. But pages are just the beginning, right? Because content is video, content is images, content is Twitter feeds, content is Facebook comments, podcasts. It goes on and on. Content is political. This is the one that usually gets me frustrated. But I think we can all appreciate that it's really hard to manage web content stakeholder expectations. All these competing priorities and different goals for web content on your website, you know, admissions, academics, student life, career development, alumni. So how do we shift the focus from individual stakeholder requirements to your college website goals? and content is time-consuming. With limited resources, no one can do it all, especially when the responsibility is just tacked on to the end of a job description, and that's in the, you know, it's a good scenario. More commonly, it's categorized under that 5% duties as assigned. So no more excuses, right? No more excuses, because these challenges are real, but they're not new challenges, right? These challenges have existed for a long time. So we need to take responsibility for solving them. So how do we do that? Yes, content strategy. Content strategy is the practice of planning for the creation, delivery, and governance of useful, usable content. So this definition, which was published in Christina's book and conceived at the IA Summit in 2009, is a really carefully worded description. Every word here is really important. But two that I want to call out are the first two that are overlooked, I think. Planning and governance. So typically in a project, people are all about, you know, creating content and even understand that it needs to be, you know, good, useful, but they don't plan for it, they don't prepare for it. And then once it's up, how do you govern it? What plan do they have in place for maintaining that quality content? And then a modifier that I add to this definition is effective content, because useful and usable describes the what, and effective describes the why, the result. As our peer, Georgie Cohen, recently said, effective is a two-way street. So quality content, or effective content, meets college objectives and users' goals, right? It's not just doing the work for us, it's doing the work for them. It's a two-way street. It's a win-win for everybody. So quality content is important, because only quality content can attract users, inform users, engages users, and retains users. I mean, these things don't just happen by chance very often. But I mean, can you imagine compromising or risking any of these goals? And most of us do every day. So got content strategy? Well, let's take a look. So in higher ed, we share a lot of the common challenges that I was talking about. We also suffer from many of the ineffective solutions. So here's kind of my top list of warning signs that your website may not have a content strategy. Welcome and overview pages are often unnecessary and contain redundant or trivial content. If a page doesn't provide unique content or offer value to the user, it's likely irrelevant. A website doesn't require a welcome letter any more than a print publication does. And if your website is usable, it doesn't require an overview. Facts pages, FAQs. This is one I think a lot of people like to share, you know, griping about. But FAQs rarely do they actually contain frequently asked questions, right? They contain the questions that we want them to ask, or rather, the questions that we want to answer. And again, they're used as to compensate for ineffective content elsewhere on your site. They're kind of making up for those gaps and ineffective content elsewhere. Quality content answers FAQs. And now I'm making some generalizations here, because these are things that can be done well. In fact, taking a step back, one example for a welcome letter or a welcome page, perhaps like from the dean of a school or something, I mean, that could be used effectively to provide some insight into the leadership of an organization. But rarely is it used for that. It's usually just kind of rehashing maybe your mission statement or kind of other keywords that you use elsewhere on your site. PDFs. So I majored in electronic publishing, so I appreciate PDFs. but they are poor substitutes for web pages. And higher ed is littered with them. And the reason is because they're so easy, right? I mean, you can just have a Word document and you save as PDF. The problem, of course, is that it sidesteps the whole editorial process, and you compromise quality. So whatever standards you have for your website are lost. And but there are, of course, you know, appropriate uses for PDFs, perhaps, you know, a long student guide or some forms that need to be printed out, and related links. Typically, they contain orphan pages or relevant content, and I find that they're often used to make up for poor navigation, right? So, oh my god, we have this new page, but it's not part of the navigation. How do we get them over there? So we add related links. And points of distinction pages. These are really, really important pages, and people have really high expectations for them. They actually expect to see points of distinction on your points of distinction page. And when they see things like dedicated students and stellar faculty, integrated curriculum, right? These are not distinguishing factors. These are the norm. These are the common. And then lots of others. Broken or mislabeled links, contradictory descriptions, missing or inaccurate information, inconsistent page titles and metadata, unanswered user comments. So this summer, a number of us in higher ed discovered that we were all in the middle of a CMS migration. And just like everyone is always in the middle of a redesign, many of us are also in the middle of a CMS migration. And so we created a hashtag, CMS Migration 2010, and we started talking about the process as we went through it. And it turned into a form of group therapy. Here's some good polls from that list. From Tim here. The web is not a filing cabinet. Don't keep outdated pages up for the sake of remembering what you did in 2008. It's one from J.D. Ross. I feel like I'm in an archaeological dig. Just found a site for a 2002 conference that was canceled for lack of participation. Another one from Tim. Oh no, I just came across a page called Mission Summary, which has over 23,000 words. So.
So, it was awful. I kind of wanted to lose it, but someone really wanted it.
So it's really easy to get discouraged, right? We can all, I think, relate to these things. But there is hope. And amidst all of these, you know, these tweets going on, there was another one. Content strategy equals happiness. I knew it. Thank you, Sherry, for this tweet. So let's make content work. Content strategy answers critical questions needed to plan, create, and maintain effective web content on your site. Some of these questions are deceptively simple, and others are clearly difficult. So how do we decide what to communicate? How do we decide what content to create and update? How do we prioritize content requirements? How do we determine our users' needs? How do we align analytics, usability, SEO, SEM with content creation? How do we maintain voice, tone, and branding with content across multiple channels? Right? Because we're talking about content strategy, we're not talking about just your website. We're talking about all your web properties. We're talking about your Facebook page and your Twitter page, all your other social channels. We're talking email, too. So, let's talk about then the elements that comprise a content strategy. So how we can make all this work. So you can break down the process in a number of different ways, but these are the stages that I that helps me to kind of compartmentalize the process. message architecture, content audit, content analysis, and then planning and implementation. So message architecture. So a message architecture defines what you want to say and how you want to say it. A message architecture prioritizes your college's key messaging across your website, relating low-level concepts with your business priorities. In Georgia Cohen's session on Monday, yesterday, someone was asking the question, well, how do we, we're curating content all over campus, different groups are doing this, so how do we maintain a consistent brand message or voice and tone across the college? How are we all supporting the brand? I mean, without a message architecture or some sort of guidance for that, you can't effectively do that. So this is kind of a roadmap for that. A message architecture ensures a clear brand message, ensures a consistent message, identifies what your organization wants to convey and how it wants to be perceived. It ensures clear, concise descriptions of organization concepts. Are people talking about your mission statement or your key values in a consistent way that people understand, or are people being confused about what they're saying, they're seeing? Aligns messaging across all your communication channels and determines if content is appropriate for your users. So why are we talking about messaging before we even get to content audit, right? Because content audits, that's where you're collecting everything that you have, and that's kind of a first step for a project, right? Well, as Marco Bloomstein says, how can you measure if content is appropriate if you don't have a metric against which to measure it? So a message architecture can be really helpful in informing the content audit and content analysis phase. So when we get into a content audit here, it'll help us to make better decisions. A content audit consists of a couple of different components. One, of course, is a content inventory. This is just a pure inventory of your website. All the pages that exist, all the content that exists. A quantitative audit, this consists of the facts about your website. So it's considering how it's organized, who creates it, what format it's in. And then a qualitative audit. So this is where that message architecture really comes in handy, because now you can start making some initial judgments about whether content is useful, relevant, appropriate. Is it outdated? So without the guidance of a message architecture, you can't make those decisions at this point, so that's important. A content analysis defines quality content and problems that need to be solved. Such things as, what is the purpose of each piece of content? Everybody should be able to answer that question. Does content meet our business objectives and users' needs, right? Effective two-way street. How do we want our users to respond to our content? What content do users need but not know to look for? Right, so these are questions. I mean, I'm also a very big fan of analytics, kind of an evangelist for that as well. But this is something that's not easy to answer with quantitative analysis. So how do you determine what people might need or may need that they didn't know up front? So understanding if content is any good, it helps to look at content analysis heuristics. So we're not talking about fixing grammatical errors and typos and stuff like that. We're looking at questions like, is content useful and relevant? Is it clear and accurate? Looking at influence and engagement, completeness, voice and style, usability and findability. So you can't see the little credit here I have for the source for that, but I'm going to include a lot of links and resources at the end so you can have all of this. The source blog post for this is really excellent and breaks down for each one of these categories detailed, you know, questions that you can be asking and evaluating of your content. And the author of that blog post is Colleen Jones here, a content strategist in Seattle, or Atlanta, pardon me. She says, the analysis is not just about the deliverable, but about the insights you gain and what you decide to do about them. And then the final element here is planning and implementation. Now we can establish a content strategy by developing an achievable, actionable plan to make content work in your organization. So when people are reading about content strategy or hearing about it, it seems very overwhelming. There's a lot going on. Audits, analysis, I mean, it's time consuming, definitely no doubt. But the strategy part of content strategy is making it work for your organization. So there isn't like a toolkit that you can just take and bring to your school for it, right? The strategy is the planning and coming up with something that will be manageable within your organization, because the available resources from college to college are completely different. So this is achieved by providing specific, relevant answers to questions about content, goals, tactics, and requirements. So here's some things you can expect from a content strategy. This is a short list, not really, but it's relatively short. Roles and responsibilities, workflow, an editorial calendar, messaging and style guides, information architecture, linking strategy, SEO and metadata strategy, page level content structure. Also, I'm going to stop real quick. In order to condense this talk, I had to remove some of the examples I have, but I actually do have a number of really good examples in higher ed for a lot of these things, in terms of like style guides and page level content structure templates and stuff like that. So I'm going to include that in a blog post, and I'm happy to answer those questions after the talk too. Content formats, content channels, maintenance requirements. So we're talking about all these things. This is what we're looking at, right? It's a little, it looks a little hectic. Content workflow is not a three-step process, or four steps, as my little kind of element suggests. There's a lot going on. And this diagram, although crazy, I think illustrates the point well, that it is a process, and it's very detailed. There's a lot of things to consider. So how do we keep this thing going? Governance. That's one of those key words that I wanted to highlight in the definition, content strategy. We need to govern content. Governing content, this is not a process. This is a mindset. I got to break it down to manage publishing process, measuring content efficacy, and evaluating goals and objectives. The publishing process, I don't think a lot of people think about it like this, but this is heard it referred to as an content ecosystem, which I think is a great concept. So looking at having a holistic view of content at your school, on your website. So where does content originate? Who creates it? Who handles it? How is it managed? And as Colleen Jones, again here, says, the content ecosystem often reveals the underlying principle of the content problem. So if you don't have an understanding of your content ecosystem or content life cycle, you can't make any evaluation whether what's working or not. So having this kind of, having this map up and is actually really helpful. This is a very simple version of a content life cycle. A little bit more, broken down a little bit more than my elements of content strategy, but kind of just illustrates the point that it's a process, it's a cycle, right? It's not a project. Content strategy is not a project. So you have the launch of the site is the beginning, it's not the end. how to measure content efficacy. So this is where we kind of repeat the process a bit that we talked about earlier. But a qualitative analysis, we'll be asking questions such as, is content redundant, outdated, trivial? Is it rot? Is content still usable, useful, relevant, appropriate? And then, of course, other elements of a qualitative analysis, usability testing. I think we're all sold on that now, right? After today? User feedback, too, surveys. And quantitative analysis, coming back to this again, asking questions, are the links still functional? Is content still findable? Are we reaching our audience? Is our content accessible? Are users taking the actions we want? And then evaluating goals and objectives. So how do we know if our strategy is successful? Right, it's the strategy that we set in place at the launch of your redesign is not going to be as useful or successful a year from then, or even 6 months. The strategy itself has to be reevaluated. Asking questions, have the website objectives changed? Have our users' needs changed? Have our resources changed? Is our strategy still effective? Is it still working? Okay, so I have a few words of wisdom. This is a work in progress. Audit, analyze, strategize, repeat. It is very much a process. And plan, not a project. Getting into this mindset is, you know, my experience has been the biggest hurdle. And very often the problem with dealing with consultants or people coming in and helping with a content strategy, I'm speaking as a consultant myself, the problem with us is that, you know, we can come in and help with a content strategy, right? We put this plan in place, and then we leave, and then the staff that are there actually having to maintain the site post-launch are not either educated or prepared to sustain that plan. So it's really important that kind of strategy is set to work in your organization, that people are educated on this process. Get buy-in through education and shame. The more that you educate people on this process and the need, the more they're going to understand the value. And a couple more of my tips here kind of say how we can do that. Shame helps a lot too. A meeting I had in the last couple of years, I was asked to talk about analytics, and I was in a room with a room full of marketing directors, and I was bringing analytics on the table because I was recognizing a lack of process, and there was no effective system for prioritizing web projects or determining what content to create and update. So I put it on the table and I asked them how do they decide what content to create and update? How do they prioritize web projects? And got a lot of blank stares. Because they knew the answer wasn't very good, right? Eventually, after a few minutes of silence, someone stood up and said, well, the squeaky wheel, right? When someone complains, then we update content. Start small and aim big. So this is not something you can easily just take and just, you know, implement easily at your institution. But creating little victories and measuring the success of those victories allows you to make the case for it. So also, going back to the shame strat approach, showing how comparing yourself to other schools that are doing good work, that have effective welcome pages or FAQ pages. And this is probably the biggest challenge, I think, for implementing Kanban strategy in higher ed. Kanban strategy requires regulation, and you need the support from the top down. It requires empowerment and accountability. Someone needs to own that for governing content at your school. Without that, it will ultimately fall apart. Show the numbers, demonstrate ROI, being able to measure the results and effectiveness of content and your strategy is really important. Okay. Questions? Let's have them.
Where do I start? Where's the thought first to take action? Having no semblance of a strategy. I know that it needs it, but I'm one person. It's me.
You're the web department.
I am the web department.
Okay. What is the very first thing that you can do at your institution to get started with content strategy? I think definitely getting people that are involved in the content process involved, educated, and talking to them about the challenges that exist. So those people that relate to content, we're not just talking about web writers here, right? We're talking about everyone's involved in this process, designers, developers, of course. So they all have a hand, and they all touch content during the process, and talking to them about the challenges. I think a lot of the challenges are uncovered during a content audit. You understand the scope of the project, of your content needs. It's possible you might be surprised that there might not be you might not have to replace or update 90% of the content on your site. But having that kind of on the table, looking at that really helps. I think everyone also goes into these projects with a basic understanding of what the institutional problems are. And then looking at the process of content strategy and identifying those areas that might be most effective in kind of addressing those right from the beginning. If you're going in as a consultant, the elements that I was talking about, that's the process you'd want to go in. You may want to approach it from a different angle. You could start with analysis. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's very good. I don't know if anyone heard that. One approach was to look at the top landing pages on your site and look at solving the problems of the content there. I think that's a good suggestion, but I don't think it's as black and white as that. You have to think about how they're getting there. Is that the first page? Is the landing page? Is that a destination page after getting through a couple of others on your site? Is that the content that's most important to your business, to the college? Because you have to balance that too, right? It's possible you have a blog post on your site that just has some really awesome keywords that are driving tons of traffic to your site, but that's not going to help you necessarily get more students on your prospective students on your admissions site. So yes, but that is really good, to be looking at. first two questions. Get a book. And I might have a third book for a third question, so it's an incentive. Yes. Asking people what the purpose, to repeat the question, how do we talk about, talk to administrators at your college about welcome pages, mission statements, about repeating content or setting up pages that are irrelevant or not useful or redundant. I would say that asking them the question, what is the purpose of this web page? If the purpose of this web page is to distinguish yourself, and you're repeating things that everyone else is saying, then that's not meeting that goal, right? Look at the key phrases that are being used on your mission statement, on your welcome page, and try Googling them, and see how many other colleges come up. Do a search for integrated curriculum. Do a search for dedicated students. You're going to see a million hits.
Innovation,
absolutely.
Faculty-student interaction.
Right, we all know these phrases very well. Yes? I'm sorry, say it again? Oh, right. So, why go to Babson College? I mean, I think that's very much, it is very much the same thing. Well, that page is typically used as a points of distinction page, which is what I was talking about earlier. And most college websites do not do an adequate job of distinguishing themselves on those pages. Anyone else? Yes. Yes. It's not a quick answer. analytics strategy is another thing that I'm very interested in, and I talk a lot about. I have a post on my website which talks about this. Recently wrote a post, guest post on .edu guru, which talks about analytics strategy. It's critical that you can actually show the results. Content strategy has gotten a lot of hype over the last year. It's now a buzzword, and people are already making fun of it for that. But I think the next step is that people are going to have to do a better job of showing the value of content strategy and how it actually increases enrollment and all the key really business factors that you have. Yes. Yep, yeah, definitely. I mean, analytics key to answering that question. Anything else? Yes.
So, how do you recommend maintaining sentiment once you get going and start to realize how you maintain sentiment?
Someone needs to own it. Someone needs to govern the process. Someone needs to be the content strategist. So, even if you can't hire a content strategist, and someone needs to own that responsibility. Someone needs to be looking at content at your institution holistically and looking at all the different ways that it comes together and has to be evaluating that and making changes. It's not something that can be put on autopilot. Anything else? Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Oh. I'm sorry. The sources for a lot of the stuff that I was talking about, as well as a number of other resources that I want to highlight, I'm going to have on my blog, on my website, in the next day or two. So, check it out.